Folks, there are so many different little nuances of a community that really make it click, that help it survive and improve itself and pull its boots on every morning and get down into the doldrums that they have to face day in and day out and the challenges all the time. And that's why I always felt it was very important that we set aside a segment on Tuesday from the NOLA Coalition of Difference Makers, those that are working in the trenches day in and day out. And those are all cliche. I get it. But the reality is that's what makes a community zing. Now, that's what separates the doers from the complainers, right? And the more doers we have in our community, the better off we are. Well, today we have one of those doers, Greg Ravey, CEO of the Heroes of New Orleans organization. He joins us. Greg, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, sir.
So, Greg, if you would, for the benefit of our listening audience, tell us about Heroes of New Orleans.
Absolutely. Again, thank you so much for giving us this platform to talk a little bit about our organization this morning. Our organization mission is to work with youth and families who are currently living in poverty or at risk of living in poverty through various community engagement opportunities, workforce development programs, and community assistance.
Now, you guys spend a lot of time working with disadvantaged children, their families, and I think you have serviced over 500 families over the past several years. Tell us more about what y'all are doing day in and day out.
So we have a family approach. I know a lot of organizations work directly with kids or families. What makes us unique that we work with both. We understand the importance of being able to service a whole household. And so we work with the young adults, ranging from ages 14 all the way up to 19 through our workforce development program, after school, tutoring, mentorship. And then we also work with the family head of households through our program that we have called Heroes Building Families, where we work with the head of the household with credit building, first-time home buyers, also access to resources like our free pantry store, free clothing, as well as senior through our commodity program that we have. So, again, we just try to meet the needs of the whole family to make sure that, you know, we're hitting our goals.
Some of this stuff, the information that you provide, you know, is readily apparent to others that have experience, but some who don't, they're not familiar with it. And sometimes it's just connecting a couple of dots and folks are off and running, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think everyone has something to bring to the table, whether that's, you know, funding, volunteer expertise, opportunities. We all have something we can bring that our community definitely can benefit from. I just think just given the opportunity to be able to come in with that resource or with that expertise makes that much different, you know, in a youth life.
I've always been a big advocate of after-school tutoring programs. Tell us about yours.
Absolutely. And so our program, we go Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And again, we focus on first our mentorship through homework assistance. And then from there, we really hit it hard on workforce development to make sure that our kids have the tools that they need to go on meaningful jobs, to start meaningful careers, and have, you know, the best shot to be them best selves. I think oftentimes when we talk about the school program, you know, people think of it as just coloring in games. But again, the demographic of kids that we're dealing with, you know, we definitely know that, you know, we have our work cut out to get them over the edge. And I think my team do a really, really great job at doing that, such as partnering with organizations like, you know, Chick-fil-A, IMTT, and many other organizations, NOLA Motorsports, to give our kids not only, you know, in the program training, but also on the job training, hands-on experience to know what's out there and what opportunities that fit them best.
Part of the challenges are, in my experience as Sheriff Greg, when I was working with organizations, is I came to the fast realization that a lot of folks, they're not nimble in their job, right? They don't have a lot of freedom. They can't, like, leave and go mm-hmm. pick up kids and, you know, bring them home mm-hmm. and have somebody there. So they mm-hmm. actually, these programs are absolutely necessary to make a difference.
Yes,
access to a computer, having more, you know, somebody that can help with the homework. You find in a lot of these families that mom and dad dropped out of school at a young age, and You know, I look at some of my granddaughter's homework, you know, in the fifth grade, and it's like, sweetheart, I can't help you. I have a lot of, I have more education, a lot, you know, more education than a lot of folks. And it's like, I'm out. I'm tapping out. I can't, I don't know what this is. And I mean, when you tell these anecdotal stories, you know, folks kind of look at you, what do you mean? And I said, I'm just telling you. I mean, that's the reality. And when they have somebody that's current, that's there, that knows what the heck's going on, it, you know, it doesn't take much for the light bulb in these kids' heads to go off, you know, if they had just that little oomph there. I mean, has that been your experience?
You're absolutely right. A lot of times, you know, we do have parents that come in that, you know, may not understand the homework because things have changed. It's a lot different when we were going to school. I know in my personal experience, my son attends ISL, so he speaks English as well as Spanish. And so some of those Spanish things I hadn't, you know, brushed up on in a while, so I had to get, you know, on top of that. So, there is a place where the two parents need the help as well. And then also, you know, it's just a full day for a parent. You know, they still have to work. They still have to provide for brothers and sisters. For their brothers and sisters, you know, they still have the weight of them being a parent as well. So, you know, again, we want to come in and be those extra hands to not only give them a break, but also making sure that they're, you know, the student has everything that they need to be successful. And again, a lot of times there's something simple as help with homework, you know, a snack after school, somebody spending time with you, maybe some time in our computer lab. To come in and, you know, just browse the internet and kind of see what's out there for us opportunities. So again, you know, we pride ourselves on creating a place for it to develop families and not just students or, you know, parents.
You know, what I found too is that it just opened up a lot of opportunities for kids. You know, in some of the programs that I was able to participate with others, some of the most phenomenal people I ever met in my life, quite frankly. You know, it was always great when you had the kids that you start, when you started a program and kids that went through that program and now were, you know, juniors and seniors in high school. And guess what they were doing?
Yes.
They were coming back after school to that program to tutor those kids. That is the most incredible scene ever. I mean, just ever. Because they recognize they would not be, you know, at St. Aug or Brother Martin or wherever they are, you know, Franklin, but for the fact that they received that little oomph and they're willing to go back and give it.
Yeah, and again, you know, I think that's so important, you know, peer-to-peer mentorship, you know, peer-to-peer, who understand it better than, you know, someone who just was in that space, who can vouch for the program more than somebody who's been through the program and is a representation of everything, you know, that we taught them and instilled in them and all their experience to keep kids engaged long enough to appreciate and to get the full impact of the program. And so, you know, I'm just like you. I was super excited this summer when we had five returning students, you know, to come from college and say, hey, you know, we want to help out, you know, where can we go? And again, you know, they're leading the pack. They're leading those workforce shops, you know, they're leading, you know, some of those entrepreneurship trainers. And so, you know, we're super excited about that because, you know, again, now I think more than ever, peer-to-peer mentorship is so, so important because they've got negative peer, you know, peer-to-peer pressure. We know that. You know, we got, you know, we know they got kids out there encouraging kids to do wrong things. But, you know, we got to shine a light on those kids who are encouraging kids to do the right thing and, you know, setting a clean path for them. So definitely want to give a big shout out to those kids who's coming back to their communities to help those people as well.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned some partnerships that you have, one with Chick-fil-A. Y'all have a holiday food drive coming up where you're partnering with Chick-fil-A Algiers. On Saturday, November 23rd, tell us about that.
Yes, and so we'll definitely be partnering up with Chick-fil-A. And just, again, shout out to them because they never miss a call. But, yeah, this would be a food pantry that we would do, be packing boxes on the 23rd for food Thanksgiving food distribution. And we do this every year. And then we have disperse those food boxes to those families around Thanksgiving time to make sure, ensure that every family in need who we can help have access to, you know, a good Thanksgiving dinner, so which is, you know, super awesome. And, again, super proud of that partnership to be able to work with them.
And then y'all are right back with Claws for a Cause event with part in the partnership with Toys for Tots. We are big fans of that organization as well. Tell us about it.
Yes. So partner up with Toys for Tots and a few other partners to get toy donations to ensure, again, every kid around us in our community can open up a toy Christmas morning. I know how important that is. You know, again, I come from this environment. I understand that, you know, waking up without having anything for Christmas is a big bummer, especially when you deserve it, especially when you've been trying hard, been working hard. And no matter your hard work, you wake up to nothing. You know, I just think that's unfair, and we do everything in our power to make sure every kid have access to a decent Christmas and can open up a toy to show them, you know, that if you think nobody else thinking about you, Heroes North is definitely always thinking about you. And we always going to try hard to make sure, you know, we can help you have some type of good Christmas.
On the text line, Sheriff, please tell him that this man, that he is an angel with a servant's heart and a role model for all of us. No doubt about that. We
thank
all of these organizations for what they do. Final thoughts, Greg, if you don't mind.
Again, I just want to say, you know, thank you to everybody out there who supported the organization, who continue to support our organization. I want to say thank you to my awesome team. I definitely don't do this work alone. To all our volunteers, to you for giving us this platform, to our partners over at UNO to help us, you know, again, do this work and get real data to show, you know, that our work does work. And so, again, just want to just thank everybody who continue to support us from when we started to definitely now.
If any of the listening audience wants to help in supporting this organization, where would they go?
You can call us whether you need service, direct service from us or indirect services. You can call us at 504-381-5150. If you wanted to send us an email, you can email us at hono@heroesofnola.org, or you can visit on our website if you want to make a donation or sign up to volunteer or be a part of some of the work that we're doing. You can reach us at www.heroesofnola.org.
All righty. Well, best of luck to you, Greg Ravey. Thank you so much for what you do each and every day for our community. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you for the platform. Y'all have a great day.
You too, sir. That's Greg Ravey, CEO of Heroes of New Orleans. We'll be right back, folks. We'll go to the talk lines, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. 7 days away from the election, last day of early voting in the state of Louisiana today. So if that's your desire, you may want to try and take a few minutes to get out there. I think they close at 6 p.m. this evening. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Got a week away from the election. We're going to visit with Ron Fauché at the top of the 12 o'clock hour, and we'll visit with Billy Nungesser, Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, at 12:30. We'll talk a little politics with both of these individuals as we head into this final week of the election season. I don't know about you, but I have been just a little bit weary of a lot of this and look forward to this kind of coming to an end, finally, quite frankly. We are going to be broadcasting live on election night from 8 to 12. Myself and Dave Cohen from WWL, and we'll have a political consultant joining us, and we will talk to a couple of people. We'll reach out to some folks as the results start coming in, and look forward to doing that. I always enjoy spending some time with Dave Cohen and looking at things from a political perspective as we get the results that begin to come in. And I think we're going to see a lot of states being able to provide those results a lot quicker. Now, there have been a number of states that have made significant changes, and a lot of people were not feeling good about these changes. But ironically, what's turned out is early voting numbers are setting records in most of the states that a lot of folks were saying, oh, this is too onerous to have to present a driver's license and, you know, this and that, and arguing all about these things. What they have found is that's not the case at all. And we were just putting up roadblocks for whatever reason. And, you know, so it's going to be, I look forward to it. Can't wait to see just how quick some of the results come in. Obviously, this process has been very caustic, a lot of allegations. There's been already some slipshod mistakes, I guess would be one way of putting it in this process. And really would be nice if at some point we could have 50 states and territories kind of handling this the same way, right? I mean, the technology's out there to get this done, and we ought to be able to do so. Some states pay more attention to it than others, and some states have really archaic systems that kind of scratch your head. And it's like, how did you stay in the Stone Age for so long? And, you know, it's just really interesting as we look at this and how they can change and this and that. And I mean, you know, we've got the federal government now suing states over illegal immigrants that end up on the voter rolls that can't vote in federal elections. So why are they on the rolls? Then they try to remove them from the rolls where they self-reported themselves when they applied that they were not a legal citizen, and therefore, you know, they cannot vote. We applaud them for their honesty of saying, you know, what their status actually is. Now we're trying to prohibit them from taking them off the rolls. It's like, what? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense what's happening here. I mean, there's so many head scratchers going on. It's crazy. You know, going back to what Jeff Bezos said about the media, another head scratcher is that you'll remember in Montgomery County, Maryland, there was a ton of hoopla about parents that were protesting the classroom use of certain LGBTQ storybooks. And they were called everything under the sun. But they only had a simple request. I mean, this was misreported so badly. In fact, I had a number of shows about it. Their request was, do what you want. Just allow us as parents, for our kids, the chance to opt out of these lessons that include these books that we reviewed, and we would rather our kids not be exposed to this material. And that was the simple request. Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland, they refuse, because they said that the district's LGBTQ curriculum falls under their English language arts curriculum that teachers teach students in pre-K through 8th grade about topics such as pride parades, gender transition, pronoun preference. And the county lawyers just last year said that allowing students to opt out of these lessons would curb the district's effort to create representative classrooms. And that gender and sexuality instruction is critical. Let me say that again. Gender and sexuality instructions is critical for educating children in a diverse society. And that the lessons don't work unless all children are required to participate. This was reported, I mean, days if not weeks. Big, big issue. Trying to suppress free speech and on. And the district took a very, you know, proactive public relations position on all of what they were doing and how offended they were by the parents just simply making this request to let them opt out, right? And there were two books that the parents talked about. One, Pride Puppy, a children's book about the vibrant community that celebrates pride parades, and My Rainbow, a book in which a mother creates a rainbow wig for her young autistic transgender daughter. So these books continue to be there, accessed. You can't opt out, the whole nine yards. Well, it turns out that the district actually engaged a process to review these books. Didn't really tell anybody what the process was, how they were going to do it, or anything else. And lo and behold, in February of 2024, they decided to stop teaching from those two books. No hoopla. No, hey, parents, you were right. In the spirit of transparency, this is what we've done. The whole kit and caboodle, no. In fact, the lawyers had defended the books in court before, and the district pulled them from the classroom, as I said, after this evaluation, because they deemed that the works were unsuitable for the classroom. So how do we find out about this? Well, it turns out the Washington Post learned that the books were pulled from the classroom after asking local school board candidates if they think that parents should be able to opt out of the storybooks. And they began this discussion, you know, about this gender identity and sexuality. And one of the candidates, in their response, said, we don't really need to talk about this because the school system has a process for reviewing the books, and Pride Puppy and My Rainbow were disapproved for classroom use. So the Post went to the school spokeswoman. When did this happen? What's up with that? And they confirm that the books are not being used for instruction, and because the district evaluated the books and said it was not appropriate, but they did not provide a copy of the evaluation of the books. Still, don't want to engage in transparency. Administrators objected to some of the book's vocabulary, as it turns out. What vocabulary exactly is unknown, they won't say, but it would require teachers to explicitly teach vocabulary terms outside of the context of the lesson for the kids to actually understand the messaging that they were trying to deliver. Sound familiar? Wasn't that what the parents were complaining about all along? And weren't the parents just saying, we think we might be the best person to decide when our kids should learn about some of these terms like intersex and non-binary? And one of the books even suggested that doctors, hold on to your seats here, only guess when they determine a newborn sex. So at birth, other than what's the anatomy that apparently revealing itself to physicians, doctors, it's only a guess when they put down male or female. And this is what the book is suggesting. And you wonder why, you know, there's these defenders that are saying that this is suppression of the First Amendment, when it's just, look, folks, we believe that these are conversations that ought to be had at our family, not in your school, in deciding this. And we don't happen to buy into the notion that doctors are only guessing a child's sex at birth. And what do I say when my child comes to me and says, what gender am I? Well, son, you're a male. Well, that's not what my teacher says. It was only a guess. And my gender is yet to be determined. Really? Again, I mean, one would think that a lot of this is apparent. And this is why when Jeff Bezos talks about the bias and everything that goes along with it, and the manner in which this was reported out, of this Republican conspiracy to suppress, you know, the First Amendment and all of this, and we keep hearing about it in today's election cycle as well, lo and behold, when they finally do their due diligence, which they obviously didn't do it in the first place, they come to find out that the complaints of the parents were, in fact, valid. And they themselves could not defend the books. We'd love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. On the text line, it says, Newell, I think you should make clear that these radically unusual left-wing initiatives are not happening anywhere around here and are not common occurrences nationwide. You know, I've heard that a lot, and I've been accused of trying to find a solution for a problem that actually doesn't exist. And I recall having conversations with folks about males competing against females, and you know, as a result of what was going on with transgenderism. And there was a report that came out the other day that female athletes lost almost 900 medals to trans identifying men worldwide. And I said, it's just going to be a matter of time. I mean, we may not have examples here at our playgrounds or otherwise, but it's going to reveal itself. Having swam competitively for a number of years, I kind of understand the competition psyche and knew that in the swimming world, it was going to probably reveal itself there faster than in other areas. And lo and behold, it did. And I remember those conversations vividly. Said it's going to end up becoming a movement. And we're now seeing percentages of kids that are conflicted. And then we're seeing increase in percentages of those that have gone through puberty blockers. In fact, the author of a major study refused to release the study the other day because the outcome of their study didn't support the position that they're taking. That's dangerous, right? So we don't want you to know what actually happens as a result of the utilization of puberty blockers, because we don't want to let you know about the mental health outcomes that are not good. They're disastrous because it really didn't help these folks that thought they were going to be helped. In fact, in many cases, and it was some cases that were even reported that to be more statistically significant than others, it created additional isolation. And then you have young kids trying to unwind these serious decisions that they made, and they have to face the reality that the utilization of some of these drugs have life-altering consequences. There's not a half-life where it goes away in 2 years. There's not a half-life where it goes away in 4 years. You may be physiologically challenged for the rest of your life. And in some cases, even causing sterilization. Now, what do you think that does to someone's mental health situation? What they're finding is, it's not a rosy picture. We had this very cavalier attitude about it. Look, I'm socially moderate. Do what you want. Be happy. Doesn't matter to me. But don't impose things on me that I don't want to have to do for the sake of your decisions that you decide to take on. And certainly, let's not take all of this away out of the realm of that horrible, horrible situation otherwise known as a parent, right? Because parents are horrible people. They're never looking out for the best interests of their children. They've made sacrifices their entire life for some whack-a-mole out there to tell them, oh, you're not the best person to decide. Because you are burdened with biases and prejudices and experiences of your life that you just don't understand. And you should just turn your children over to we, the understanding professionals that know better, and make this decision for you. Really? I don't think so. I thank God that I had two parents that got all up in my it, okay? Because I was a little bit of a nonconformist. And I wouldn't be where I am today but for them stepping in and reading me the Ultimate Riot Act and said, it's going to be A, B, C, D, and E, or else. And else wasn't real pretty. And thankfully, Newell had a little bit of a lick of common sense and decided that else was not for me. And I look back daily and thank the Lord that I had two parents that got involved, because I wasn't ready to make some of these decisions. Let's go to John. John, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell, these so-called woke folks, they're quite confusing to me. They think a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid, two of my sons are that age, they think they're old enough and their brain is developed enough to make a life-changing decision to take treatments that are irreversible and life-altering, but yet these same woke folks who want to debase and destabilize and demoralize their society, they think a 17-year-old's brain is not developed enough to be tried as an adult if they murder somebody.
Bingo. Blackout. Blackout bingo right there.
And destabilize.
Yeah, blackout bingo right there.
Their true agenda.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Somebody with body dysmorphia has a mental illness. They deserve our compassion, our love, our empathy. But to give them a sex change, to give them gender-changing drugs, is like giving a bulimic lifetime supply of syrup of Ipapac rather than treating them for their throwing up. That there's no difference. We've just allowed the far left to infiltrate psychology, pediatrics, the media, and education, for that matter, and they are trying to destabilize, debase, and demoralize our society to bring us toward some dystopia that I would rather be part of an armed revolution than be part of.
Well, John, I am not going to go that far. I'm going to tell you, I just think that there's an appropriate time and place, and I just don't like minimizing the importance of the familial unit, the matriarchy and patriarchy that's involved in setting the moral compass of our kids day in and day out at an age that's appropriate, whatever that age is determined to be. It's certainly not minors that make these life-altering decisions. If they want to make that at 21, so be it. Go do it. But I'm not in favor of taking the parent away from these decisions that has gone on in a number of states. And the alternative is scary, right? You have activists that are actually the ones that have empowered themselves to start making these decisions on behalf of kids. And when kids go through puberty, I don't have to think, long and hard about it. Everybody, when they go through that age, is screwed up. Life is like a whack-a-mole for them at that point in time. You have raging hormones, things going on. You're doing things that, and you look back on and say, what the hell was going on at that point in time of our life? And that's when we want to empower them more so than ever before? I don't think so. Doesn't make sense to me. Let's go to Josh. Josh, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call, Newell. I'll be quick. I appreciate this conversation. That last caller, minus the armed revolution thing, was spot on. I just wanted to say one thing. There's a Facebook group of 40,000 members that detransitioned because of this. Most of these people that advocate don't have children, and people don't talk about the suicide attempt rate after these chemical castrations is like 40% after. So people don't even talk about it, and your other host, not you, but Newell, Scoot, he defends these type of people. And I think it's funny, man. It's you're basically turning these kids into drug addicts. And when they become older, they're like, wait, why was I listening to my public school teacher, not my parents? That's all I want to say.
What do you think about this most recent happenstance where there was this, several years study that the author of it has decided not to release it because was afraid that it was going to be used because the outcomes were not what they thought they were going to be and didn't paint a rosy picture of the position that they had about a lot of this with relative to puberty blockers and the mental health of these young kids and everything else. I really believe that to be incredibly dangerous, because it seems to me that they're letting political motivation stand in the face of the science. And it's interesting, right? You know, there are these groups of people out there, when the outcomes embrace what they want to have, they're waving the banners, follow the science, follow the science. But when it doesn't, they have no problem in putting science in the back seat. None at all.
And Newell, can I say one more thing?
Yes.
So, this kind of goes with the transitioning of children. It's the same of autogynephilia. It's called autogynephilia. It's when men dress up as women. It's a sexual act. It's the same as body. It's the same as your previous caller, dysmorphia. This is a mental disorder. This is a mental disorder, and people like Scoot, who I have to listen to for 3 hours coming up, he's going to defend it. And then he's also going to say these people need to vote. Newell, when I was 15 years old, my friends and I got crabs. And
why shouldn't they be able to vote, though? I mean, if they want to vote, they have the right to vote. I mean, it's clear. 18 and a U.S. citizen. I mean, that's where it's at. That's where I part with some of this, guys. I mean, you know, we can't be, and I guess that's why I call myself socially moderate. I don't want them to trample on my rights as a result of some decision that they made, and I'm not going to trample on theirs. But what I will do is call it out for what it is, of what we're just not exercising what I call common sense. In fact, someone just texted in, your opinion for people, whether they agree with it or not, should be considered common sense. Try to point out the obvious. We'll be right back. After the break, we'll visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll talk about what's going on in the presidential election 7 days out. In the back half of the hour, we'll visit with Billy Nungesser, the lieutenant governor of the state of Louisiana. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL.